Today we talked to Coach Brian Wood. He's the current associate head coach at Villa Park High School for the boys basketball team. He's also an offensive consultant for Chapman University's women's basketball team. He has many years coaching at the high school level and the college level, both for men and women. He's worn many hats in his career, and he's even been an assistant to the athletic director. But before that, he was a Division I basketball player at Cal State University of Fullerton. He's got a pretty extensive background and a great journey, so let's roll it back and see how the conversation went. Pull back the curtain on your past and tell us how you got into coaching.
Well, I think for me, it's a, I think some other people might agree, I think it's a interesting and kind of a great story. It's after I was done playing this summer in the NBA league, I started working for a communications company, and I had just decided that I was going to not chase the dream anymore. I was trying to have a little bit of a reality in my thought processes. As I'm a 5'10 point guard trying to play in a league where the average height is 6'7". So I went out and got a real job and was doing that for a couple of years, and the company I was working for was having financial troubles. And so I went back up to, at the time, the coach that I had played for at Cal State Fullerton was the head coach at Chapman. And I went to go talk to him just to say hello, because I kept in contact with him. He was a really good guy. And then I was going to lace up my shoes and play a little bit. And then when I walked into his office, he said, "Hey, you know, my assistant, he quit yesterday. It's your job if you want it." And I never thought about coaching at that point. I went home and thought about it for about 24 hours and took the job. And wow. The rest was, I know. I mean, it's kind of crazy. I mean, I had helped out a couple of people with coaching the youth in JBs and the here and there, but I was never really serious about it. But I mean, literally, I walked into his office and he said, "Yeah, my assistant quit yesterday. It's your job if you want it." And I kind of didn't know what to think. It was a little bit shocking to me because I never thought about it. And at the time, I was, what was I? I was 25 years old. And so I thought, hey, what a great gig. I mean, I can go to work every day wearing shorts and a t-shirt if I want to. And I knew at the time it wasn't a great high paying job. And, you know, when I talked to Coach Bukowski, who's still at Chapman, he explained the pros and cons of it. And he says, hey, it's not a lot of money, but you know, the benefits of teaching and coaching are great. And they outweigh the high salary that you're going to get in some other job that you might have. And I seriously thought about it, and I looked back at it, and it was the best decision that I ever made when it comes to coaching.
Well, of course it was. I mean, it started your career, and you definitely chose the right path, in my opinion. it's great. I get to wear shorts every day, just like you were saying, and that's probably my favorite thing about the job.
Well, and I think you are right. I chose the career path and the place that I started at. I think that actually helped me also. I got to Chapman. This was October, November of 1996. And so Chapman academically wasn't this powerhouse university yet. And so I still had the leeway to be able to recruit different types of players, and still got to see the university grow on both ends, financially and educationally. So that my timing of it was perfect. And I was able to grow as a coach, grow as a person. I even went back to school and finished my school at Chapman. So I have my degrees from Chapman. So I was able to grow even in that regard. So I mean, everything, all the moons and stars and everything, you know, they just align. I mean, I know people talk about, you know, God has a plan for you. Boy, did he ever have a plan for me.
Okay, so I know you still have involvement at the college level, but tell me a little bit, why did you make the transition from coaching at the college level to the high school level?
Really easy question. I mean, really easy question for me to answer, and it's something that I absolutely have no regrets about, is in 2007, my daughter was born. And I didn't want, because I knew how much that I commit to my job. And it doesn't matter whether it's coaching or whether it's working at, I worked for Bank of America for a number of years. I put my all into my work. And so when my daughter was born, I didn't want to miss the first walk, the first talk, the first crawl. I didn't want to miss any of that. And so I just decided the best thing for me at that time was to step away, because I knew that she was going to be my only one. And so I didn't want to have any regrets. Well, I mean, you always have regrets about certain things you do in your lives, or, second guessing things, but that was the one thing that I'd always said was going to always be the most important thing to me, was going to be my daughter. And still to this day, the most important thing to me is my daughter. She didn't have a choice to be brought into the world. We made that choice for her. So I was going to make sure that she always knew that daddy was around. She was always going to know that daddy loved her. So I stepped away from coaching for a couple years. And then, my wife said, you watching the basketball game, taking notes and writing down stuff, you know that you should go back into coaching. And that's when I went back in. And funny enough, and then this from your high school background, is I went on the CIF website and I saw someone that posted a job that needed an assistant. And I picked up the phone and I called. And the person, he literally said, you're kidding, right? And I said, no. I said, no, I'm not doing it for money, not doing it for any other reason other than I want to give back to the game. And he goes, you do know that you have more experience than I do, and then you could run this program. And I says, yeah, but I mean, that's not what my goal is. My goal is to assist you and build a new program. And it was at San Juan Hills, and it was their first 2 years. No, actually, it was their first year where they had qualified for the playoffs, because it was a brand new school. So it's like,
Wow.
what great opportunity to go into a program to where, there is their first season at the varsity level, where they could actually make it to the playoffs, and you don't have the baggage of, kids having, these preconceived ideas about, CIF championships and all this stuff. It's just pure basketball, and you get to coach that. I loved it. It was great.
Okay, so you're an offensive consultant at Chapman University right now for women's basketball, and I know you're also at Villa Park on the boys' side. But I'm curious to know, how have your offensive principles changed over time?
You know what? That's a great question. And I think for the younger coaches that are out there, I think you have to adapt. I think depending on the level that you're coaching at, I think if you don't adapt, you're doing yourself a disservice. And the reason why I say that is, so, I mean, for certain people, and you could probably eliminate the Dukes and the North Carolinas of the world who really don't recruit, they go out and they select. But for everybody else, you may not be able to go out and get that exact prototype to your program. So you may have to make an adjustment when you look at your roster and you say, I've got 12, 15 players, but I don't have Shaquille O'Neal, so I can't run the triangle, but I love the triangle, because it just doesn't make any sense if you don't have a dominant post player to run the triangle. So you could be, like, for instance, and I don't really like it, but if you look at the Houston Rockets of today, they're playing small ball. And you'll see a lot more people playing small ball, because there isn't a lot of 6'10 post players out there that like to play with their back to the basket. So you have to kind of have a little bit of an adaptive offense to that. I was a young coach and someone asked me, he says, what is your philosophy? And, you know, and you get caught up into this is what your beliefs are. But I think it's okay to have beliefs. But if you're not willing to change your offense, then you're doing yourself a disservice. And we've changed it now. In the 9 years I've been at Villa Park, I think we've changed our offense. This will be our third time because I'm in the process of changing it now. We just don't have the same personnel, or their basketball IQ isn't as high as one group. So I have to make an adjustment and change it to what we have.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm the type of coach where I like what I like, and I'm still learning that, like you said, you know, if I don't have Shaquille O'Neal or a dominant post player on my team, then maybe I can't run the triangle. Or if I don't have scorers that can attack the basket hard, I can't run dribble drive, which is hard to do if I'm someone who really likes the triangle offense or dribble drive. So it's just a learning process for all of us, definitely. But can you tell us a little bit about the teams that you've coached as far as the good and the bad, you know, the ones with the winning records and maybe the losing records? What would you say were the biggest differences?
I think the biggest differences is, and everyone, you know, all the good coaches preach, you know, chemistry. And I don't think it's the chemistry off the court. I think that's something that is, you know, it's going to happen if it happens. That's more along the lines of friendship. It's the chemistry on the court. It's willing to share the ball. It's the willingness to give themselves up defensively so they can play as one cohesive unit on the floor at that moment. And those are the teams that I think that you see that are really good. We had a team in 2017, and this is the team that we actually lost in the state championships in overtime. And you could see the development of this team way before the season even started. We're talking about June during the summer league. Is they took pride in beating people by 20. And it wasn't just because, oh, they love winning so much. They took pride in, I'm going to defend. I'm going to play together for the whole game. And it was so nice to be around. They didn't care who the leading scorer was. They didn't care who took the most shots in that game. They didn't care about anything other than, we want to win. We want to win by 20, and that was be it. And so refreshing to see, you know, 14 to 18-year-old kids kind of give themselves up for the betterment of a team. I mean, you can see kids that, you know, tend to be a little selfish and, well, I'm going to go get mine because I'm playing for a scholarship. And most of the teams that we've had at Villa Parker are that way. We pride ourselves in, you know, playing for the name on the front of the jersey, not the name on the back, you know, all the cliches. But, you know, it's really been a part of our culture. And so it's really nice when you can see the end result of that. You know, in the 9 years I've been at Villa Park, we've been to the, you know, CIF championships in the finals. We've been there, what, three times. We have a regional championship and been to the state championship. And I think that's a pretty good run for a public school.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Can you pinpoint your most stressful moment in your coaching career?
I think every day is stressful as a coach, but I think the state championship run was probably its most stressful. I mean, because when you get past, first off is when you get to the sectional championship game, unless you are a high profile private school, and I'll use Modern Day as an example, is Modern Day every year they expect themselves to be in the state playoffs. So they're one of the few programs that look at their schedule and their calendar for the year, and they kind of pinpoint where they would like to be at this time of the year, knowing that they're going to be playing in late February and March. As a public school, you're looking at the CIF, you know, finals and the playoffs as kind of being your season, Well, then when you go into the state playoffs, it's extra basketball. And then it's different. And so now it's, you're playing someone from Fresno, you're playing someone from San Diego, and it's one and done. And you just don't really kind of prepare yourself well for that, those extra games. And for me as a coach is, you know, I do 100% of our scouting. So me on a short turnaround, because you're playing, you know, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, of trying to track down film and then come up with a game plan and then write up the practice plan to get ready for the game that you're going to play in less than, you know, 48 hours and you find out who your opponent is. It was very stressful. And it was great. And the part about it that I knew that it was stressful, not at the moment because you're just going on for adrenaline, but when the season was finally over, I was worn out. It was one of the first times in my coaching career that I felt like that I was just mentally burnt out. Yeah.
Wow, okay.
It took its time. It took its time to kind of get the juices flowing and get up for the next season, which, and I like to say some of that had to do with the team that followed that wasn't as good. And we weren't as good because of what you touched on before, is they didn't buy into everything that we were trying to do. And they didn't buy into the chemistry on the court. And there was a couple guys that were selfish and a couple guys that, you know, were out for themselves and had some outside influences that, you know, got into their head and they didn't buy into what we were doing. So I think that may have had something to do with it also.
Instead of your most stressful moment, what would you say was the most rewarding moment? And I'm sure there's been many, as this is such a rewarding profession, but if you could pinpoint maybe that moment you knew, you know what, I really love what I do.
I, like you said, that's really hard. And it's always been kind of hard to pinpoint something. It's, I think for me, and looking back at it, I mean, here it is, what are we, 2020? And so I'm coaching this long with a couple breaks here and there since 1996. I think the biggest thing that I kind of hold my hat on is the fact that, like, now with, you know, the social media, is I've had several players invite me to their weddings. I've had several players that reach out to me and want to, you know, friend me on, whether it's Facebook or, I don't know, Twitter or Instagram or whatever it is. And they always have something, you know, nice to say. It says, you know, I love the way that you push me. I love the way that you coach me. I love whatever it was. And they took it to the, it wasn't just about wins and losses. It was, you always got the best out of me. And that was always what my approach to it was, I didn't want to be their friends. I wanted to always earn their respect. I wanted to earn their respect by pushing them to be the best. And at the time, it was the best person that they could be, because I used to joke with them and say, you know, you're at Chapman or you're at Villa Park and you're such a good student and all these things. And once you graduate and you get out into the real world, you know, I'm going to have to come and work for you one day because you're going to be, you know, the best CEO of whatever company. And then they come back to me and says, Coach, I really appreciate you saying this or doing that. And that's what I kind of get out of it more than anything else. I mean, obviously the trip to the state championship was great. And, you know, the stuff that we did on the bus on the way up and, you know, dinner after the game and all that stuff, those are all great memories. But, you know, the toughest night every year for me is senior night. It's because I've had that kid for 4 years and now they're leaving the program. It's like the parent that has a kid that's leaving the house to go to college. And that's always a tough day in you. And it's always been a tough, and I, you know, I try to hide it. And only so many people know this, but on senior night, I always shed a tear. I just have a hard time with it. I just do. And you know, I don't tell everybody that because now I look like a big softie, but but that's always been the toughest night for me is senior night. And out of the almost, what is it now, almost 21 years of coaching, I think there's only been one senior night where I didn't shed a tear. And that was with a group that was so super selfish or like, I can't wait for these guys to go. But but that's, you know, I think that's what makes me different is I really never got caught up into when at all cost. It's, I like to see my guys, and even a couple of times I've coached girls teams, is I want to see them grow as people. And I think, you know, especially now with all the craziness that's going on in our world, is if you have good people around you, you know, and good people out in the world, you know, I think some of this other stuff that goes on doesn't happen. I think people are judged ultimately by their integrity, you know, and I believe, because I have done, and I think actually most recently, and this would be a great example to this, is, you know, my daughter, who's now in the sixth grade, but I was coaching she's now in the seventh grade, and I was coaching her sixth grade team. And they had a coach before, and the coach, you know, I think he was trying to do the best that he could, but he just wasn't a good coach for them. And I told the parents, I said, look, you know, I'm super busy. I've got, you know, all this stuff going on. It's just, but I'll take over the team if that's what's best for the girls. And they said, oh, great. Well, we'll get together some money and we'll pay you. And this is, and this is, I don't want your money. This is ultimately, this is what I want is for this group of girls to make sure that they're taught the game the correct way. And then they have fun doing it. And that's always been my approach to it. I mean, if I was running a club program, it would be no different. That's just because ultimately when you do things and it's just solely about money, then you lose what I think all coaches should be in it for, is to make sure that you are not only positively influencing the people that you're coaching, but you make sure that they become good people also. I mean, because that person is always going to remember the coach. You're always, I mean, you played at high levels and you could probably remember every single coach that you played for and every personality that that coach had. Mm-hmm. And if you don't do it the right way, then that person's always going to have a negative taste in their mouth about, oh, when I played basketball, this coach did this and this, and you don't want that. I mean, that's just me. I think that's what makes me different is I have the utmost respect for Carol Jew, who is the women's coach at Chapman. And, you know, when I say that I'm a consultant for her, is I'm a good friend of hers. I she's one of my best friends. And, you know, it could be tomorrow and she'll call me and says, this is what I need. You're a better offensive mind than me. Let's go have lunch, and I'm buying lunch. And we'll sit in the Japanese restaurant and we'll have some sushi and we'll talk basketball. And she says, great, I need you to come and put that in. And I just do it. And we've never talked about, you know, payment, never talked about, you know, oh, is she going to come buy me dinner or take my family out? It's never been about that. I love giving back, especially to good people. And she's really good people.
I love that. I love that. So going back a little bit to coaching and coaching the multiple levels and teams that you have, especially both on the men's and women's side, what would you say are the differences that you've noticed in coaching men and women?
I think women get a little bit of a bad rap. And the reason why I say that is because I think women play harder. I think they play a lot more like a team. See, women tend to, and this is changing, but women tend to not watch a lot of basketball. So they don't pick up the one-on-one skill set that You know, when you watch Kobe on TV, you're watching, you know, Jason Tatum now. They don't pick up that one-on-one skill set. And so when you show them an offense, they run that offense to death, and they don't leave the offense. Versus the boys that are watching it, they're into the one-on-one. They're going to, and they break away from the offense, which you could probably say that's a little bit more selfish. So then to me, that would be one of the biggest differences. Forget the obvious that the game is played above and below the rim. We all know that. But women tend to run the offense to death, and you have to almost prod them to leave the offense to take an open shot. Versus guys, you almost have to tell them to stop shooting darn ball so much and run the offense. I mean, so there's kind of a difference. The women's game to me, when you really get into it, is it's pure basketball. I mean, they play harder. You know, it's a lot more physical than people realize because, and again, you know, the game is played below the rim. The physicality on setting screens and stuff has to be there to be able to get your teammate open. So, I mean, the only reason why I think the women's game doesn't get more of the, you know, notoriety or really the respect that it deserves is because you don't see the high-flying dunks, you don't see the lob, you don't see all that stuff. And that's, to the purist of the game, yeah, who cares about all that stuff? But to the casual fan, that's why they're watching you. They need, you know, the dunk. They need the thing that they can't necessarily do because everybody thinks, oh, well, I can do what she's doing. Well, have you been on the court with her? I don't think you can do what she's doing. So,
right. Knowing what you know now, what would you tell your younger self?
I would tell my younger self this. I had one opportunity to be the head coach of a program, and I was, you know, the program head, so to speak. And I think what I did was ride officials too much. I think when you do that, you send a bad message to your players. And so then they start taking on your personality. And then they start to complain about this call and that call and whatever. And I used to joke with myself, and I've gotten better to this point of, gosh, I want to be Phil Jackson. You know, he can just sit there, you know, and not have to get up and yell and scream. And he can sit there and kind of, you know, watch the game. And I says, gosh, I would love to be able to do that. And you know it, it's just as well as I do, how hard that really is to be able to sit there and not feel like that you're not being a part of the game by getting up and, you know, shouting out instructions to this player or looking at a referee and say, are you kidding me? You made that call, you know, that kind of thing. And that's the one thing that jumps out to me that I would give the advice to my younger self. I've been in a great situation for 9 years. I am the, you know, the top assistant, or in a lot of people's eyes, I am the co-head coach at Villa Park. And there's been, I think, about 5 games where I have been the only head coach because Kevin Reynolds, who I respect the heck out of, either was sick or out of town on business, whatever, and so I had to coach the game. And some of the things that I was, you know, just saying that I would tell my younger self, I've been able to now implement. And so that's what kind of jumps out at me the most. It's one thing to have passion, but it's another thing is to take it too far to, you want to complain about everything, every single call, because at some point there's going to be one that you really want to complain about that official is going to tune you out because you complain since the opening tip of the game. So then what makes that any different than the other one?
That is so true. And sometimes that can be just so hard, you know, because there are times when we're given maybe not the best ref or the ref that we would choose. And it's so hard not to complain about the obvious call, but you know that at some point in the game, you're going to get it back somewhere, you know, somewhere along the lines, they're going to blow that call for the other team and it's going to even out. But I hear you. I still struggle with that.
Well, and I think one of the mindsets that I think has helped me the most is that referee is human. And
right.
We as a coach, we've had a game where we didn't coach a great game as a player. And you could probably remember those games like they were yesterday where you didn't play a great game. And so you have to just think about it as a human and as an official. Maybe you just didn't have a good game. And what are you going to do? I mean, you're going to, you know, belittle this guy and berate him because he had a bad day. I mean, I know it, and it makes me sound like I'm some saint because there are officials that I've really ripped into. And even to this day, there's guys that I don't like. I says, oh boy, we've got this guy. This is going to be awful. But I try not to ever say that in front of the players because I don't want them to ever have that into their minds. I want them to go out there and play. And then we have a rule in the program. You're not allowed to get a technical. So you need to keep your mouth shut. You don't talk to officials. That's not your job. Your job is to play. My job is to coach, and my job is to be able to work the official. Because I think there's an art to working an official. Because I think certain officials will listen to you. I think, but you do have to take the right approach to it and at the right timing of it. And so, I mean, when I'm on, and I still do it even now as an assistant, is after the official goes and reports the foul, he comes over and he stands and he knows that he's going to get an earful. And then I will say something like, is that what you really saw? And he'll kind of look at me and it'll be a smile back and forth. And he goes, you know what? I might have missed that. And that's all I'm after, is for him to just say, you know what? I might have missed it. And then that, and whether he, you know, really truly believes that he might have missed it, what else can you really be after? I mean, it shuts me up. I go back and I sit down. So, I mean, referees are human.
I'll be completely honest with you. I think I'm worse on the youth officials than I am the college level officials. And I mean, I've had some really bad officials at the youth level. I mean, literally walking up and down the floor on their phone, texting, just bad.
I'm 100% with you there. And I think the reason why you're that way is because you're in it for the right reason. And that official that's walking up and down the court, and it's not all of them, but there's a majority of those that they're at the youth or at the AAU tournaments and stuff. They're out there to steal money. They really don't care whether or not, you know, they're helping the kid develop or they're calling. They just know that they've got six games to do that day and they're getting $25 a game or whatever it is. And this is my fourth game. This is my whatever game. And after this, I'm getting my check and I'm getting out of there. And I can't get on board with that. I says, don't do it if you're not going to do it at 100%, because ultimately you are doing a disservice to that kid who doesn't know anything other than this is the game that I'm playing. And if you don't call a foul or you don't do something like this, well, heaven forbid the kid gets hurt or, you know, they miss a shot because of it. And then now they've got that, you know, stuck in their head. I mean, I have a game literally in my head right now where, you know, the official didn't call, well, one of my girls getting tripped. She literally, and I have it on video, she stuck her foot out and tripped the defender and she fell and almost broke her wrist and he didn't want to call a foul. I mean, and it's, I don't know how you couldn't miss it. I mean, but so I mean, it's that kind of stuff. It's, you know, and that's why I have the biggest problem with the AAU stuff. It's because you get a group of coaches that are out there just to be able to take money from the parents. And then you get the officials who are just out there to take the money from the organization while they're walking up and down, you know, officiating the game. They don't get to half court. You know, I saw a guy, and I wish I would have had my phone in my hand. He was eating his lunch. He was taking a bite of his cheeseburger in between transitions. And so he'd run over to the table and take a bite. And then he would, you know, one time he kept it in his hand a little bit longer than he wanted to. So then he kind of tried to hide it and then put it back. I was like, I mean, I understand that there's a lot of games going on, but really you're going to eat your cheeseburger during the game? I mean, how does that make that kid feel?
Yeah, they're not all like that, you know, not all
they
AAU
are not
programs,
all that way.
Not all refs, but a good amount of them are, and that's what's so frustrating, because I mean, they get good money. These games don't even last an hour. Most of the time they're 40 minutes, so it's like you're doing less than an hour's worth of work, and you're getting what, $25, maybe even more. So it's frustrating. But
well, and
what are you gonna do?
I've done it before, and because there was been a tournament that was at Villa Park, that somewhere along the line they had a mix-up, and one of the courts didn't have officials. And I happened to be walking through the gym and whatever, and they says, "Well, coach, do you know anybody that can call real fast?" And I said, "I'll do it." And I went into my office, I grabbed my whistle, and I changed the shirt so it made it look like. Matter of fact, I even had a referee shirt. I put it on. And I officiated the game. And I ran, you know, tried to get in position. And then after the game, one of the parents had said to me, he says, "Why do you look so familiar?" I says, "Well, because I'm the coach here." He says, "Well, you're not an official." "No, I'm not at all." She says, "That's the best officiated game that we've had in a long time." And says, "Yeah, I kind of miss a call here and there." And I says, "But you make the call and you're assertive about it. People in the building, they don't question you. And as long as you're running and trying to get into a position," they didn't say anything. I mean, it was every once in a while I enjoy doing that, because it kind of humbles you as a coach to have to do that. So you can see, ooh, yeah, maybe I've kind of a little bit too harsh on that one official that one day, you know, back in 2017. But it's a great career if you get into it for the right reason. And like I said, I've had little to no regrets on the things that have gone on in my coaching career. And at this point, I don't see myself stopping anytime soon. So I continue to enjoy it. The kids are changing, and I try to change with them. You know, I'm not the Bobby Knight throw the chair and so hard on them. And now we try to laugh and joke a little bit more in practice. And, you know, I have a kid that's at Colorado right now, and he came and says, "Coach, we need to have a Twitter account for just basketball." So then I started a Twitter account. "We need to have a Instagram account for just basketball." So I think we have an Instagram account for basketball. And he wanted a Snapchat for, I'm like, "You're getting too way over my head with all this social media stuff." But we do those kind of things for them, because, you know, we try to evolve with, you know, how young the players are and what they do and the amount of threes that they take, and the games change. So if you don't adapt with them, then you get left behind.
100%. Well, thank you so much, Coach, for joining us. I really appreciate it. You gave us a lot of good nuggets and information today. So thank you again for joining me.
You are very welcome. Very welcome. I enjoy it.